I'm Chris Spear, President and CEO of American Trucking Associations. Today's program focuses on the growing importance of natural gas in the marketplace, its potential impact within the trucking and shipping industry, and the role it can play in our nation's energy independence. I'm joined here in studio by Fred Smith, co-chair of Securing America's Future Energy, or SAFE, and president and CEO of FedEx Corporation, a $42 billion global transportation, business services, and logistics organization. FedEx serves more than 220 countries with operations that include nearly 700 aircraft and over 90,000 vehicles. And FedEx handles more than 9 million shipments each business day. And joining us live from Dallas is Boone Pickens, known widely as one of the nation's most successful businessmen. He not only built one of the largest independent oil companies, Mesa Petroleum, but was also a highly successful investment fund operator with BP Capital. Boone has been a visible and vocal advocate to reduce the country's dependency on OPEC oil and is a champion of pursuing alternative energy options. Thanks to each of you for joining us today. Fred, let me begin with you. You're co-chair of SAFE's Energy Security Leadership Council, a group of high-level CEOs and high-ranking military officials whose focus is combating the economic and national security threats posed by America's dependence on oil. Can you explain to the council a little bit more and why a business leader such as yourself has taken on this national security issue?
Well, Chris, going on 10 years ago now, I think a number of us in business who used a lot of energy, companies like FedEx at the time, UPS, Southwest Airlines, some of the cruise ship companies and so forth, became very concerned that the United States had no energy policy and we were becoming increasingly dependent on imported petroleum. And at one point that reached over 60% of all of our daily petroleum needs. So we formed the Energy Security Leadership Council with about eight former four-star generals and admirals, many of whom spent a big part of their career protecting the oil trade lanes that were so necessary for modern American life. And again, these CEOs from business and set about with the very outstanding scholars at Securing America's Future Energy, SAFE, which is the parent organization, to develop a series of recommendations for the nation. And essentially, they boil down to three things. One, produce as much as possible of our own energy in the United States, or at least North America. Second, use less of it. And third, develop alternatives. And those recommendations have been fulfilled to a great degree, to an extent I think would otherwise not have been the case absent the ESLC. Now, we've also been extremely lucky in our energy policy, and the fracking revolution has revolutionized oil and gas production. And as you said, the United States has a huge supply of indigenous natural gas, far, far into the future needs of this country. We can supply all we need. The development in battery technologies has been astounding. I think just this very day, General Motors announced their new Bolt, as they call it. That's correct. Be wrong, has a range of 238 miles. So alternatives are being developed. And we're using less of it, partially because we supported, in addition to maximizing production, new fuel efficiency standards, which was incorporated in the Energy Act of 2007 by the Bush administration, which many people thought would not embrace those types of things. So that's the history of the Energy Security Leadership Council in short form.
Very good. Very good. And Boone, you're well known as an oil man, yet you've made major bets on natural gas, and you've spent millions of dollars of your own money warning the American people about the dangers of our national dependence on foreign oil. Why is an iconic oil man an advocate of natural gas and reduced reliance on foreign oil?
You know, I can't imagine that we buy oil from the Mideast and fund both sides of the war when it is absolutely unnecessary and stupid to do. We have more oil and gas in the United States than the rest of the world. And we showed what could happen. Our production oil got down to 4 million barrels a day 7 years ago, and then we brought it back up to 9.6 million barrels a day. Now we have pretty well shut down drilling because of the price of oil, and we're down to 8.4. So we've come off 1,200,000 barrels. The price of oil will go up, and we will go back to drilling. But natural gas is the cleanest of the hydrocarbons. And we could use natural gas, heavy-duty trucks. Fred Smith, FedEx, they are moving in that direction. But leaders like Fred that see the value of getting off OPEC oil is extremely important. And that was where I started from, is get off of OPEC oil. And we could do that very quickly if we had the leadership in Washington.
Very good. Fred, FedEx has done a great deal of work piloting and developing several forms of advanced fuels, from electric to biofuels to hybrids to natural gas. And compared to other advanced fuels in the heavy-duty space, what makes natural gas so attractive to FedEx?
Well, natural gas is, as Boone just mentioned again, extraordinarily abundant in the United States. That's point number one. Point number two, and I think we may have a graphic on this, but it's a much more stable priced commodity than oil is. And the reason for that is because it's domestically produced. Electricity is in the same vein, much more stable, and you can see it on this chart. You see down at the bottom those two lines that are almost flat. That's the cost of electricity and the cost of natural gas. You see the lines that look like the Swiss Alps. That's the volatile oil price. And remember, oil in this country right before the Great Recession of 2008 in July of that year went up to $147 per barrel. And today it's about $47 a barrel, $100 swing. And at that point in time, we were importing about 60% of our petroleum needs. So what's changed in the case of natural gas, obviously fracking has made even more of it available at a cheaper price. But I think that the developments of new engines for over-the-road heavy-duty trucks that use CNG or centrally fueled heavy vehicles like buses and garbage trucks and things of that nature has completely changed the game. The cryogenic containers or tanks for CNG have come down in price. So now we're opening up in a couple of weeks in Oklahoma City a state-of-the-art CNG terminal for our FedEx Freight unit, which is our largest user of heavy trucks. Now, this is no small thing. Last year, our FedEx Freight unit and our FedEx Ground unit drove almost 3 billion miles in the United States. 3 billion miles. And the heavy truck community uses about 3 million barrels of oil per day. Another thing that's a very big issue these days is the increasing focus on environmental stewardship. And of the hydrocarbons, I think Boone mentioned this, natural gas is considerably cleaner than diesel fuel. So it's more stable in price. It has been less than diesel, you know, a lot of the time. It's American produced, and it's not nearly as volatile. So those attributes of CNG for over-the-road fleets, like our FedEx Freight and FedEx Ground, are very attractive, and that's why we're putting the effort behind rolling out some of these CNG terminals.
Will this new facility in Oklahoma serve as your flagship CNG facility going forward?
Well, it,
at least initially?
Yes, of course, but it won't be the last.
No,
of course, we think we've got it perfectly designed, but the reality in anything is you learn things as you go along, and I think we've got another one planned down in Texas not long afterwards, and as long as the economics continue to make sense, we certainly know it makes sense from a strategic standpoint, as we just spoke about.
Well, the photos are great. I wish you luck with the launch. It's outstanding. Fred, talk about infrastructure for a moment. Are the costs of constructing infrastructure still high, and is that slowing the development and the availability of alternative fuel sources?
Well, I think that the point of use for natural gas is an issue for a number of carriers and users, but I think the economics and the environmental benefits are so great, just like any other investment, they make sense today, where a few years ago, perhaps they didn't. So a company like FedEx Freight is putting CNG into its portfolio of fuel because it's an ROI justified project that's more stable, as we mentioned a moment ago, in terms of its price outlook, and considerably more it's cleaner in terms of emissions. And I think sometimes people forget this, but the United States is actually decreasing greenhouse gas emissions. And one of the biggest reasons for that is the adoption of natural gas for the production of electricity in lieu of coal. And obviously many other environmental initiatives have contributed to that, but that's a huge part of it. So again, we use about 3 million barrels of diesel fuel a day in the heavy truck sector of the U.S. economy, about 19 million barrels overall. It's a big number.
Absolutely.
And if you can convert a reasonable fraction, much less the entire part of the heavy truck industry, to clean-burning natural gas, that's very, very beneficial for the economy, for the carriers, and for the environment.
I'm going to bring Boone into this. Do you have anything to comment on Fred's points on this?
The one point on natural gas, it is up every street and down every alley. So there's no infrastructure necessary to get natural gas to any location in the United States. So if you want to put it into the interstates, which Clean Energy Fuel has the natural gas highway, that has been accomplished. So, but the gas is everywhere. You do have to put in the pumping equipment and all into a location, such as Pilot Flying J. They have those facilities available in 100 of their stations. So the infrastructure, don't worry about it. That will happen, and it'll happen very conveniently. But two, Cummins now has come out with a new engine that has 90%. I'm saying 90%, 90% less NOx emissions than anything we've ever seen. Well, all you have to do is to give, in America, is to give the problem to industry. Industry will figure out the problem. But the natural gas is such a superior fuel that we are going to find all kinds of advantages once we start to use it in large quantities, like FedEx and UPS, and hopefully BNSF.
Fred, do you think in FedEx's case that incentives to transition fleets over to natural gas are necessary? Do you think the market will take its course, as Boone just suggested?
Well, I think the market will take its course in general. As he said, the underlying infrastructure for natural gas is virtually in every neighborhood and part of the United States. And these developments on the engines, like the Cummins engines and the new tanks and so forth, you'll be able to justify converting a lot of the U.S. heavy-duty fleet to CNG just on an ROI basis. But the reality is it will take a very long time without incentives. So if we were wise at the federal and the state levels, and you're very interested in reducing NOx by 90%, then incentives would allow the faster conversion to a more clean-burning fuel than would otherwise be the case.
So you all know that innovation drives outcomes, and in transportation, we hear a lot about autonomous vehicle technology, including trucking. And where does natural gas fit in that mix, and what, if any, relationship is there to autonomy and safety in our industry? Anybody care to answer that, Fred?
Well, we have a significant autonomous vehicle effort underway, mostly in over-the-road transportation because it's simpler. The highways are all standardized. The urban congestion that the Google car has had to navigate is a much less challenging type of environment out on the interstate system and so forth. However, we believe that automation in vehicles, or at least the commercial vehicles we operate, is going to be much more along the line of our aviation operations. And remember, we have a huge aviation fleet, as you mentioned at the start, and they have robots on our planes. They're called autopilots, and they operate at 10 to the minus ninth. A human being operates at best about 10 to the minus fifth in terms of errors. But I don't think you could get most people today to get on a robot-controlled airplane. They sociologically are much more confident getting on an airplane that has a couple of well-trained pilots, despite the fact that there's a robot on there. And these autopilots are incredible. We can take one of our 777s off in Hong Kong and punch the autopilot on, and it can go to Indianapolis and Memphis nonstop, land 00, taxi to the gate, and turn itself off. That's a robot. But we think that in the heavy truck area, the way autonomous vehicles ought to proceed is a well-trained driver and perhaps the robot being the second section. It's monitoring what's going on, but if there's an accident or congestion or something of that nature. Now, the question you asked specifically about CNG, the reality is people's expectations are much higher for robots or autopilots than they are for people. Look at the current publicity around the tragic accident, a single fatality that took place in a Tesla car, which, as it turns out, probably wasn't the autopilot, but that's a different issue. It was the expectation of the public, which tolerates 30-some-odd thousand fatalities a year on our highways, that they went into this new realm of concern about a single fatality. So people have different standards. One of the things that CNG does in an autonomous environment, it provides a fuel that almost regardless of the horrific nature of any type of an accident, it's not flammable. It dissipates. If the container is broken, the CNG goes into the atmosphere and on a tiny basis may contribute it to pollution, but sure. it doesn't exacerbate the accident. So I think CNG on over-the-road vehicles is exactly the right fuel. Maybe someday batteries, but certainly for the foreseeable future, CNG would be the ideal fuel for autonomous over-the-road vehicles.
So Fred, I'm going to dig a little bit deeper on this because it's a really good point. Our industry spends $49.6 billion a year sitting in traffic. So how can these types of new, you know, alternative fuels serve as perhaps a solution to relieving congestion and bring that ROI to our fleets?
Well, the most important thing that technology can do is mitigate fatigue of drivers and allow 24/7, 365 days a year operation. That's just for starters. You know, there's no reason under an automated vehicle you reach the point where the captain of the vehicle can lean back and rest while the autopilot drives. That would be one good example of how it could have a profound implication on national productivity. I think secondarily, the thing that's very important, and you know this, the litigation landscape around vehicle accidents is exploding. And there's an enormous industry of the plaintiff's bar that pursues these types of claims, and the cost of these claims is increasing at a very dramatic rate. So much so that you really have to question the viability of smaller firms in the trucking industry to be able to do this, to be in this industry. So in my mind, the only solution to this problem is technology, just as it was in aviation. The fifth generation of jets are quantumly more safe than the first, second, third, and fourth one. You can plot it out. And so we believe that many of these technologies should be mandated tomorrow. And it might be a short-term expense for putting technology into the trucking fleet, but there is a huge ROI. I mean, it's a major problem of our logistics infrastructure, this increasing litigation and the cost of unfortunate accidents, and technology is the way to turn that curve.
And certainly for drivers, more miles driven, not sitting in traffic, is good for them too. They're paid more. But on autonomous, would you agree that, you know, drivers will always be needed for navigating cityscapes, pickups, deliveries?
The idea of complete autonomy is, at least for the foreseeable future, not realistic, at least in the commercial sector. You can't beat one of our, you know, superbly trained aviators on our pilots. We have great professional drivers in our operations, and every day they deal with exigencies and accidents and reroutes and one thing or another. So what we want to do, our philosophy at FedEx, is to how do we make the great team members we have more productive, safer, and make their job more pleasant.
Very good. Boone, what are you seeing as the biggest impediments for natural gas acceptance in trucking?
You know, it's once I think a fuel gets in place, it's hard to change. And the engine was slow to develop. It has developed now. The one thing that has always been in place is the cost of the fuel. Say a parity, natural gas to oil is 6 to 1. And so $50 oil would be parity, would be $8 natural gas. And natural gas has been to $8, but seldom, and never did it, it never stayed up at that level. Today, natural gas is under $3. So there's a huge difference between oil and natural gas. I say oil because diesel is, I'm comparing diesel oil to be the same thing, but it's natural gas is so much cheaper, and you have such an abundance of natural gas that it will always sell cheaper than diesel. Now, you heard what I said. I'm 88 years old. I said, it will always be cheaper. So I didn't say forever, but I'll never see natural gas sell above diesel. And it is a cleaner fuel. So what are the impediments to, you know, the technology has been slow to develop. Range was a factor at one point, not any longer. So, and the NOx emissions on the Cummins engine is somewhat remarkable. I think the impediments are clearing up. And what you still are missing is the leadership that FedEx will provide. If FedEx does it, I can tell you there are a lot of other truckers that are going to look at it. They've looked at it. They will accept it a lot quicker now than they did a few years ago.
Well, that's a great segue to my next question. As you know, at ATA, we're an advocacy association, and we seek policies on behalf of our industry, and we're also in the home stretch of an election year. Politicians are talking a pretty good game about energy independence and the importance of alternative, sustainable fuels, but they haven't really provided a whole lot of detail on what that means. If each of you were speaking to these presidential candidates, what would your advice be to them on these issues? Fred, why don't you start?
We should be energy independent in North America, at least. United States would be ideal, but I certainly don't think there's any problem, securing oil and gas from our friends and neighbors in Canada or in Mexico. And in fact, we're providing natural gas to Mexico today. So assuming that North American energy independence is the goal for all of the geopolitical reasons we know, and it's important in that regard to recall most of the conflicts of the last century, the 20th century, had at their heart oil. The initial Japanese attack in Pearl Harbor was because we embargoed their oil from Southeast Asia. The current dispute in the South China Sea with China is largely over those lessons of World War II. They're oil importers, so they want to make sure that in any kind of a conflict, they can't be cut off from oil, which is the lifeblood of modern industrial society. So our goal in the United States is the same as the Energy Security Leadership Council laid out: become energy independent by producing more in North America, using less, and developing alternatives. That would be the advice that we would give them.
Very good. Boone, I know you've got a lot of advice for these presidential candidates. What would it be?
Let me give you 2 minutes on history. In 1970, we hit 10 million barrels a day in the United States. And then it was a steady decline down to 4 million. In 1970, 4 million barrels, we got down to. And now, you go back, 73 was the Arab embargo. And at that point, it was pretty well decided we were going to be forever dependent on Mideast oil. So we moved the Fifth Fleet into Bahrain, and we have kept the Straits of Hormuz open for whom? The OPEC cartel. We're not paid for that. And we see that 17 million barrels a day flows through the Straits. And incredible, today we're using about 1,300,000 barrels a day of the 17 million barrels. Now, we have a very good friend in the Mideast, which is Israel. And we need to always keep that in mind. But we don't have to have the Fifth Fleet in that area to the extent that we have it. We're there with two carriers. I don't think that's necessary. We need to rethink our energy plan for America, but you touched on it, Fred. Put Canada and Mexico together, North America Energy Alliance. We are the market. Mexico and Canada both export oil. We would be the market for that, but we would also put the XL pipeline into being for obvious reasons. I mean, that puts your hand on over 200 billion barrels of oil in Canada, and we don't have to have any military involved. It is available to us, and it will be at market prices. We don't pay any bonus to anybody for oil. But it's if we had an energy plan, we're the only country in the world that doesn't have an energy plan.
Boone, I'm going to stay with you for a moment. Let's talk economic cycles, particularly recessions. ATA members, it's fresh in their memory, the last recession. And, of course, our members are deeply invested in the shipping industry, and profitability tends to wax and wane with the broad economy's growth and recession cycle. Could our industry's adoption of natural gas vehicles actually help reduce the severity and frequency of economic recessions that hurt our industry?
No question about it that natural gas would be great help because in a recession, but you mentioned something that we haven't even talked about. Shipping is going to go to natural gas. It's hard. I mean, you know, bunker fuel is ugliest of all fuels, and natural gas can compete with bunker fuel, and you can go in and out of these ports. You know, you have to, coming into California, Long Beach, Los Angeles area, you have to change your fuel, and you have to be clean bringing those ships in there. You can come in there cheaper on natural gas than you can on diesel.
Very good. And looking at the carrier owner, the technician, the driver, everybody that makes each company successful, what would be the one thing that you would each like them to hear from this today? Fred, why don't you start?
I think all of us are concerned about the future of the environment and the earth and so forth, and it's hard to argue with these kinds of metrics on the environmental side of the house. I think secondarily, they want FedEx, their employer, to be financially successful. And as we've talked about extensively today, the economics of CNG and heavy-duty over-the-road trucks, either local like garbage trucks or buses or the types of rigs that we use in FedEx Ground and FedEx Freight, they're compelling. So the marketplace generally wins. And if you have, as an adjunct to that, great environmental benefits and financial success, I think that that's a story that certainly our folks would be solidly behind.
Very good. Boone, I'm going to give you the last word. What would you have to say to our viewers?
Well, I think that, you know, your employees are proud when you are 100% domestic fuel. Well, the lucky part for us is the domestic fuel we have so abundant to us is the cheapest one. It's domestic fuel and the cleanest. When did you ever get the opportunity to be cleaner and domestic and you also are cheaper? So I think our, you know, the people in the country, your employees and all, are proud if you're U.S. fuel and you're clean. The clean has never been sold in Washington. And you have people that want to cut out all fossil fuels. Well, try that one. There's 95 million barrels of oil used every day in the world, and 70% of it goes to transportation fuel. If you cut out fossil fuels, you would stop the world. It doesn't even make sense. What does make sense, there are going to be different fuels in the future, and it could be the battery is a solution for the future. I'm not against the battery. I'm for America. I'm for safe. And you guys have done a fabulous job, and it's not a hard topic to put on the table, and everybody gets on board with what we're trying to do.
Well, I believe that our time for today's show is coming to an end. Till next time, thank you for joining us.